Yeah, sure is.
Hi, it's Billy Squire calling.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm a little tired.
Yeah, a little tired. I was going to ask going to be one of my questions here.
I had a big show in New York last night.
Yeah, I heard you.
It's always very exhausting.
Yeah, I heard you on the radio from Pittsburgh the other night.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, good stuff. I only heard like about 10 minutes of it, but I caught the hits. So, so how is...
All hits.
Yeah, they're all hits in your mind. That's right.
Yeah.
So how's the tour going as far as you can tell?
It's going great. I'm very happy with it.
Well, it seems like it's grueling, you know, on paper. It looks grueling, at least.
I think these things generate their own sort of momentum, you know, once they get going. But, you know, you start out and... the reports of the shows go around, people start hearing about it, the promoters hear about it, and the press writes about it, and, you know, but if it's going well, whichever way it's going, it usually sort of translates, it starts spreading on its own, and I'm very happy with it.
But is it kind of a shock to your body to be running around on tour buses once again?
Not at all. It's like riding a bicycle, actually.
Never forget, huh?
No, I'm doing it better now than I did, you know, than I did 4 years ago.
Did you come out on the road 4 years ago with Enough Is Enough?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, see, I don't remember hearing your name or seeing your name on a marquee here since, like, 1983.
No, I wasn't that happy with the way everything that was going on at the time around that record. And in retrospect, I think I probably should have gone out for just a little, you know, just for a few shows, just to keep my name and, you know, sort of in the public consciousness. But I was a bit discouraged, and I wanted to get back in the studio and do something which I felt would really set things straight.
What went wrong with that project?
I let someone else produce it, basically.
And that's enough to throw it off?
Totally. That's totally it. I can honestly say it's totally it.
So what kinds of things happened when you bring 12 songs in and say, here they are, you know?
He wouldn't let us play together. He had a very, very specific way of recording, and he wouldn't let the band play together. He made us all play to click tracks.
And who was this? Who produced?
Mr. Collins.
Okay.
He's an English producer. Very sterile, very clinical, totally, I mean, didn't have a clue about what makes great rock bands. And I was just led to believe that he would be able to help me. And it was, an expensive lesson, but a good one, you know. But he just, you know, totally took all the soul out of the band.
So isn't there a point where, with your successes that you had, that you had enough clout to say, hey, this guy's, you know, not my record.
Yeah, but see, I'm the kind of person that once I commit to an experiment, then if I'd bailed out in the middle of it, I would have been accused of being an egomaniac, you know, and being stubborn and not willing to, give other people a chance to see what they could do. So I felt that I was sort of stuck. It was kind of a point of, you know, where I couldn't win either way. I knew it was going wrong, but I knew that if I backed out, I would suffer a certain other, you know, other fate. So basically what I did was just tough it out and kept the record, you know, kind of in the realm of what my records are like. You know, I mean, I think it's a really good record. I just don't think it was allowed to reach its potential. This guy kind of, you know, squashed it. But it's not anything that I'm unhappy about. I like it a lot. A lot of people think it's the best record I ever made. So, you know, there you go.
Why didn't we hear it on the radio more?
You'd have to ask my record company that. They treated it as like a total non-event. It barely was released. I mean, it sold 700,000 records, which is amazing, which is like a totally unknown fact, which I found out only the other day by asking for a sales printout. I mean, they never gave me a gold record or anything. And we were just doing some, you know, we were going through some numbers and things. So we got asked for a sales printout, and it's 700,000 units. So it really didn't do that badly.
It must seem like you're terribly jaded, because I've talked to three bands today that would die to have 700,000 sales.
Oh, well, I'm saying it's not bad. Well, you know, my other records of mine have sold millions. So, but I'm just saying that we're getting absolutely no help from the record company, which was insane, because I was a pretty big artist for them. And they did absolutely nothing, and getting almost no exposure, it still sold that many records. So In the end, it turns out to be not such a bad project, but it was very disappointing to me and for the guys at the band, because we felt, as I said, that there was a lot more promise in the record that, you know, that could have been realized had other people do their job. And I'm not saying this to make excuses, because I don't live my life making excuses, but this is one case where this happens to be the truth.
All right, so I'm spinning down the road listening to the radio, and I hear Don't Say You Love Me by this guy named Billy Squire, who I haven't heard of in 5 years. Where were you during this? I mean, between Enough is Enough, because I knew you had an album out, but I never heard a song from it. But
It came out in the fall of 86, and I was working on, I started this record in the spring of 87 and finished it in the end of 88, because I was working very hard to make sure that it was a record that would be noticed. So I was writing a lot and recording a lot and going in and out of the studio. Basically, I was in the studio for all that time.
Is that hard work?
Yeah, it's very hard. I hope that I don't have to do it again. I think it was definitely necessary in this project, and it was worth doing in this project, but I don't want it to become the standard.
So you spend...
You don't have to take that long to make records. I just felt I was under a lot of internal pressure to do it, to answer all these questions and doubts that people had about me. So I just felt that I better, make sure that I came out with my guns blazing.
So it took you 18 months to make 45 minutes.
Well, I was in the studio about 10 months, which is still a long time. But, between writing and rehearsing and recording and stopping and listening and thinking about it and all that, it was about 18 months.
So now, what has been the second release from this album? I don't even know.
Don't Let Me Go has just been released as a single. Well, you wouldn't, because Capitol isn't doing anything with it, because Capitol doesn't work their records. They just put them out and hope that something happens. But
is this your last album, Capitol?
Maybe.
Okay.
No, it isn't in terms of my contract.
Okay.
It's getting to a point where there's no reason to make records for them, the way they're going now. But we'll see. They just got a new president in, so...
It's funny you'd say that, because I had a real hard time getting to you. I called about 20 different numbers just to find out who was doing your publicity, because everybody had somebody else. I even wound up talking to people that manufacture your shirts in Macon, Georgia or something.
They probably have a better idea than the people at the record company. Well, you always try to be optimistic. It doesn't do any good to have a negative attitude, and the Capitol's just got a new president who came from Elektra, and Elektra's a pretty aggressive label, so we'll see what he has to say.
Is it easy to get cynical?
I'm very cynical about it, but I'm not bitter. I don't let those feelings rule my life. I acknowledge them, because you can't pretend they don't exist, but I don't walk around going, this sucks.
Right.
I say, this is the reality, this is what they're doing or not doing, what can I do? So, I make the best records I can, and now I'm going on tour. And, the shows speak for themselves, so we're getting a lot of positive feedback from that. And I'm just doing what I can do. I'm doing as many interviews as I can. I'm doing as much, press, everything that I can, just to, it's kind of like a one-man army. And that, they can't stop me from doing that. So it's kind of like starting from a grassroots level in a way. And obviously I have a core audience, and I just have to get out there to them as any way I can.
The show at the Ritz last night sold out?
Oh yeah, there were people out in the streets. We could have done a bigger show, but I wanted to do small places this tour. I wanted to create, an aura of excitement, and that it was make it really an event. So I wanted to play places where they'd be oversold houses, as opposed to going into the Garden or something and doing 10,000 seats out of 20.
Right. Okay. Looking through the album, I didn't realize you were friends with John Bon Jovi. How did this all come about?
I produced a demo for him back in the early days.
This is the Runaway?
No, it was before that.
Oh, really?
Before that. And we just know each other ever since. He used to call me up for advice, about different things, managers and producers and publicists and things like that. And then he came into his own, and then it just got on an equal footing with me, which was great. The relationship has become sort of, one of peers, which is great. It's great for me. I'm obviously very happy for him and very proud of what he's done. And it's nice to have another person you can look straight in the eye and have respect for.
So I noticed another Bon Jovi on there, Tony, with the original spelling. Is that a brother?
They're related. I think they're cousins. They're loads of Bon Jovis, but they're definitely related.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Bon Jovi changed the spelling of his name.
I spent some time with him over the summer when he was in town here. Just a real good guy. I mean, the whole success thing hasn't changed him a bit. I can just tell. I mean, I didn't even know him before, but he's just a good guy now.
Yeah, he's a very nice guy.
Desmond Child, did he come to you through Bon Jovi or through Kiss or through Akon?
I wrote with Desmond on Tale of the Tape on my first record. So Desmond and I were working together before any of these other people even knew who he was.
Well, he worked with Kiss way back when.
This is around the same time that he was working with me.
Okay, so this maybe comes through the whole Piper bit?
Just after that. And I just felt like writing a couple songs with somebody else because I've been spending so much time by myself doing this record. You know, I just felt that I could use the, you know, a little outside input. So I had some songs that weren't finished, and I just brought him in and said, you know, what do you think of these? Do you like any of these? Do you want to work on them? And he picked out a couple, and then we just finished them off.
Okay. So how is the old stuff going over live, and how did, you know, you incorporate new members of your band, like Jimmy Crespo? I saw him with Aerosmith and a few years back.
He's working out really well. He's a really good rock guitar player. That's not that hard to fit it, to fit in. That's the, you know, it's the kind of music that he likes to play. So that isn't very difficult. Everything goes over great. The old stuff is like, you know, the risk of sounding horribly immodest is legendary. You know, I mean, this is what people tell me. That's kind of the reaction. I play Lonely as the Night. People, you know, the place like explodes. It's kind of like that. So it's really quite fun to go out and realize that the music that you've made has had this sort of impact on people.
Well, I got to be honest with you.
Just after a long time, you know, being away and all.
Yeah, hearing In the Dark the other night in the car, it was like, it brought back the old memories. You know, I was in like the ninth grade when that song came out, and it was like...
Well, that's what good songs should do, I think. Well, certainly that's part of it.
I think maybe the best part of it is that I hadn't heard it in so long, and then you realize it's a good song. If you hear it every 2 weeks on the radio, you know, like you hear, you know, Stairway to Heaven, it kind of loses its edge after you've heard it for the millionth time, you know. Are you playing Christmas this time to say I love you at all?
No. We don't really have time, to be honest, and it's not close enough to Christmas. But we're trying, you know, we're cramming a lot into the shows just under 2 hours, and we can't even get nearly all the stuff that I'd like to do. So I don't think we'll be doing that.
You're not leaving?
I really like the song, but I'll, you know, I leave it for the radio to play.
How did that whole thing come about?
I was just sitting around one Christmas season thinking about Christmas and what it meant, and just came up with a sentiment, and that's what I write. You know, I write about sentiment, you know, when I have something to express, and I just thought that was a sentiment worth expressing, so I just went for it.
Oh, it's a shame you don't play it live.
Well, we made, you know, if we did a Christmas show or so, obviously we would. And I love the song. I just think that there's a lot more stuff that I want to be doing.
Are you leaving any of the hits out?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. What do you leave out?
I can't tell you.
You can't
come to the show.
I am coming to the show.
It depends on the night. We just can't do them all. Well, we do most of them, but we can't do them all. So we usually one or two get dropped out. But no one, you know, we don't leave anybody disappointed.
All right.
We do enough of them.
Well, I appreciate you calling me, and I hope you get some rest there. I was in New York.
Okay, just New York is just exhausting because, you know, everybody in the world comes to the show, and it's, you know, you just can't. It's everybody wants you sort of.